A month ago, we discussed here a few major stumbling blocks that made it difficult for Chinese people to come to faith in Jesus. This month, we want to take you to the other side of this topic. What are some of the biggest opportunities for Christianity in China? As we said just a few episodes ago, we can say one thing about China, and it's true for a lot of people, and yet we can say the very opposite, and it's true for a lot of other people as well. That is definitely the case when we talk about coming to faith in Jesus. What may be stumbling blocks for some people may be great gospel connections for others. Today, we're going to talk about a few of them. My name is Beth Gregory.
And I'm Ryan Zhang. This is the House Church in China, a podcast that shares stories from the house churches in China.
Ryan, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Had a little excitement in our house with a false broken foot from my seven-year-old, but coming out on the other side of it and no fractured bones. So
okay. Yeah, you told us about that, but we didn't get a follow-up. So I was like, couldn't sleep for the last 2 weeks because I had no idea what happened to Beck.
Yeah, my seven-year-old is okay. We were at the beach and he was playing on some steps and came down hard on his foot. And yeah, he really faked us out for about 24 hours by acting like he was dying. But I know he was in a lot of pain, but I have to say that this is the third time I've taken that specific child to the urgent care or hospital in the last 12 months. And next time that kid is going to have to show me a bone sticking out somewhere.
Well, I'm sure he feels very loved.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of love, we are talking about Christians in China and how to care for them and love them better. And I want to say here for all the audience, thank you. One, thank you for listening to us. And two, I want to let you know that these two episodes, last month about stumbling blocks and then this month about gospel opportunities, we hope that this not just help you learn more about China, but also helpful if you want to know Chinese immigrants in your community and how to love them. You don't have to take them to the ER like Beth did with her son, but there are many ways to connect with Chinese people and love them and share the gospel with them. And we hope that these two episodes, at least, would help you do that.
That's a great point, Ryan. So let's get to it, okay?
All right.
Okay.
Well, Beth, what are some of the ways that Chinese people respond to the gospel in the ways that make them more interested in the gospel?
Yeah, well, I did want to start by talking about history, a little bit more recent history. In this case, the 1989 June 4th incident in Tiananmen Square. Although you might think that was just a political incident, it actually has had a ton of ramifications for the spiritual and religious landscape of China. So after Tiananmen, a lot of people were really confused and really hurt. And a lot of people didn't know where to look to find meaning in their lives. For a while leading up to June 4th, a lot of young people especially had been hoping for political liberty, freedom. There was a lot of optimism and hope in the air. But after the Tiananmen Square incident, it was really clear that political liberty was not going to come. And the previous decades in China had been a very tumultuous time with the Cultural Revolution and just various programs led by Mao Zedong that had dismantled a lot of traditional Chinese culture. So at that time in the early 90s, there was just a huge void in China. The historical foundations had been torn down. Communism had really undermined traditional Buddhism, Confucianism, belief in folk religion. All those things had been discredited and really pointed to as foolish. But nothing had come in to fill the gap. So during that time, a lot of people became Christians. And what's really interesting to note is that this is especially true of students actively involved in Tiananmen Square protests. So a lot of people, a lot of those people who were leaders of the movement, decided politics didn't have anything to offer them. They didn't really have any hope. And so they found the answers they were looking for in Christianity. So I'm sitting here and I've been talking about history, but this is something that remains true in China today. When people don't have hope in politics, when they don't have hope that they're going to be able to find the answers or the changes that they need in the political arena, they look inward, look to find the meaning of life in other ways. So at that same time, a lot of people, some people found answers in Christianity and others poured themselves into making money. And in the early 90s and 2000s, people were very successful. China has modernized since 1989. China has modernized very rapidly. But an opportunity for Christianity comes in that right now we're in a period in China where looking for meaning and making money is really ringing hollow. The economy is horrible in China. Based on the conversations I've been having over the last couple of years with Chinese believers, I would say that the economy in China is affecting people and in a much stronger way than the economy in the U.S. People are disillusioned with trying to make money. People are giving up on finding meaning in their jobs. And there's just not a lot of hope. So there's a couple of viral sayings that have been really, really popular in China in the last 5 or 6 years. In English, you could call it lay flat or involution, neizhuan. And then there's even a saying called bailan, like let it rot. Ryan, have you heard of those?
Yeah, I've heard of them because they are everywhere, especially with the young people.
Yeah. So when people say, we're just going to tangping, lay flat, what they mean is I give up. I'm not going to strive. I'm not going to try. I'm not going to get up off my back and try to accomplish anything. When they say they want to let it rot, they really just mean the same thing, like the same thing. There's no point in trying. There's not a lot of hope that people are going to be able to have a good life or achieve security through making money. So what else is there? What is life about? And of course, that's where the church comes in. Christianity offers answers to all of those questions. So one more note that's a little bit of a side note, but I really find super interesting is during the COVID lockdowns in China, in Shanghai, I believe, there was a case where police or security workers came to take someone and forcibly put them in a treatment facility. And this person did not want to go. And they were being threatened and said, well, we'll harm you. We'll harm your family. We'll harm your children. And the guy yelled back. This was all caught on video. It was very public. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, we're the last generation. There's going to be no more kids. And that's kind of become another rallying cry in China. Like, people are like, what is the point in trying to have a future? Like, there is no future. We don't even want to have kids because there's no hope. So I think it's interesting because when I talk to Chinese overall, it feels like there is no hope, but the church is full of hope. And just even in terms of living that out, Christian families in China are having a very, very difficult time right now. But when I talk to these Christians, I find that most of them do have several kids. Like just earlier this week, I was talking to several young pastors and I found it interesting that most of them had 3 kids, which I would kind of say in China is like the equivalent of having 7 kids in the U.S. It's very countercultural and stands out a lot. So, yeah, that's just a little bit of a side note. I think the hope that the church offers is something that is very, very attractive to Chinese Christians. Ryan, you have thoughts on that? Or
yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. Like you said, people have multiple, Christians have multiple kids, whereas a lot of my friends, my generation, they're married, but they don't have kids. And they're allowed to have more than 1 kid now, but not very many want to have more than one because one is so expensive, but two is like, what's the point of having more kids? And also the disillusionment, especially with young people, that's very real. Because for the older generation, at least they've lived through many decades of life before, they don't have a lot of hope and expectation for the future. But for young people in their 20s, the whole life is ahead of them. And if the life they know right now, working long hours, another popular saying is 996, it's 9 hours a day and 6 days a week of working. 996.
Wait. I think you mean 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., right?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. 12-hour days, 6 days a week, just 9 to 9, 6 days a week. So that's just not pleasant. And to basically slave away in a company that you're not making a lot of progress in, that a lot of stress and huge competition, that's just not fun. And most people hate that life. So they're looking for some things to get out. And same thing for the... You began with the June 4th movement, the Tiananmen Square affair, however you call it. Don't forget that was started by students. That movement was started in college campuses, and the people who drove that movement were college students. And they had a lot of hope for the future. And overnight, that was broken, disillusioned. So a lot of those students were the ones seeking answers and became Christians, because they have a whole life ahead of them. They wanted to know what's the point, what's the meaning of life. And so that actually brings to the second point, is that when that failed, a lot of them, not all of them, a lot of them came to the US, came to the West, because if they couldn't find answers in China, they wanted to turn to the West and find ways to answer life's big questions. So Western religion, at least for some, that became a very attractive thing. So last time we talked about how Western religions, and they think Christianity is a Western religion, that's a stumbling block. In some way, that's true, but that's also different for some others, because they do look at the West and look at Christianity and say, hey, they seem to know some things that we don't. And so especially in the 90s, a lot of these students left China, if they were able to leave, came to the US, a lot of them became Christians. We have a Chinese church here in Cincinnati. A lot of them, the people came from that generation. They left China in the 90s, became Christians, and they became members of this church. So Western religion is a positive thing to some. And also because even now when we have scholars coming out of China to visit Cincinnati, and they're sent by the government. So a lot of them are Communist Party members who are sent by the government to study abroad, to do a year of research overseas. And they come, they want to get better in their academic fields, but a lot of times they also want to know what's happening in the West, like what's different about America that gives people hope. And then so they are very open to attending church, learning what's happening. And they may not be able to go back to a church in China, but they wouldn't mind going to parties at church. They wouldn't mind going to events to just learn what Christianity is about. So we have an ESL class at our church, and a lot of those Chinese scholars came to our classes, and we would share about Jesus with them, and they would listen because they are curious. They just need answers somehow. And that's been an attraction to them, but it does answer some of their questions they're asking for. And we hope that they could take some of those answers back to China and share with their families.
Yeah, I feel like I've noticed that a lot of, especially Chinese intellectuals and scholars, when they think about their own country, again, last time, remember, we talked about how China loves to talk about the century of humiliation from the Opium Wars onward. And the government will really emphasize, you know, we were taken advantage of, we were defeated by these Western powers. And again, there's like truth in all that. But I do feel that a lot of Chinese intellectuals look at that and think, well, why were we weaker? Like, what made us not have that inner strength or resiliency? And I mean, it can make us feel a little uncomfortable, but because we don't want to associate our Christianity with that kind of power. But the truth is that I have seen a lot of people kind of look to say, well, what's the historical heritage of the West? Like, what philosophy was it built on? And as they look to the philosophy the West was built on, they inevitably encounter Christianity.
Now, Beth, you've been working with students in China. What are some of the opportunities, connections you've made with Chinese students?
Well, I want to acknowledge really quickly that all we've been talking about today are opportunities for gospel growth in China. And I do want to point out that the Chinese church has been in the last decades overall have been a time of huge growth, just exponential. But at this exact moment that we're speaking in 2026, I would say the Chinese church is not in a period of huge growth. The people are not becoming Christians in China the way they were 20 years ago. And that's just true and for sure. But I think what is really encouraging is that gospel seeds are being planted in a ground that seems to me to have a lot of hopes of future fertility. Like you said, what did I experience when I worked with students? So it was closer to 20 years ago, which is hard to believe. I lived in China and I worked with students. And one thing that I think really stood out is that it seemed like the Chinese friends that I knew, I feel like they really appreciated being in relationships where we could talk about real things and deep things. And it was very attractive to them to see and to sense that I cared about them beyond and outside of what they could offer me. In China, it seems like the whole society is built on this concept called guanxi. And Ryan, you can chime in here, but what guanxi is basically just this, if we have relationship, I do something for you and you owe me something in return. You have anything to elaborate or yeah?
Yeah, it's quite pragmatic. And there is a sense of friendship, relationship underneath that, but a lot of guanxi is also an exchange that you know somebody that could help you and then you now kind of owe them a favor. And then when they need something, they could also reach out to you. And a lot of my aunts and uncles in China operates like that with people. They know somebody that knows somebody that could help them with somebody now that they know that person and now they have a resource there. And it's a vast network of people that you could know, but at the same time, they're not real relationships. And it's hard to have deep conversations with people like that because you're looking to them not so much for friendship or answers, but for pragmatic, practical help. And even like a few years ago when I went back to China and I had dinner with my friends and they were very curious what I believe. One, they know that I'm a pastor, but also they're not looking to me to get something because I'm a guy in America that can't help them with anything. But they just want to have conversations and talk through life issues. And it's rare for them to have someone that think about some of these questions more deeply than they do with the other friends.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, so
yeah,
it's very interesting because I think at that time when I was in China, a lot of Chinese students especially did want to make friends with a foreigner because my English is great since I'm a native speaker. And it's kind of like they did approach it with that guanxi mindset and that they wanted to be friends because they knew it offered them an opportunity to practice English. And if you were able to speak English, you could get better grades, you can have better business connections, your parents will be very proud. Absolutely not to like look down on anybody who is approaching a foreigner with the idea of improving their English, because that's very normal human nature. But I think it's a little unsettling in a good way when people would look for friendship, look for a relationship, and then find that reciprocated without looking for anything in return. So that was the case for me, but I think this is still an opportunity for Chinese Christians today. Ryan, you and I were talking a little bit offline, and I think that's still true. Like the church offers a place where people you know, or walking in the spirit, following the Lord wholeheartedly, or people can love other people, not because they're going to get something out of someone else, just because it's another human who's made in the image of God and has dignity and worth.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that leads to the next thing, is that there's a sense of moral depravity in China because things are just so pragmatic. It's about money. It's about getting your life better. And that goes against a lot of the Chinese virtues, traditional virtues of love, kindness, gentleness. In some way, the fruit of the spirit is not new to China. These are all virtues across the board, around different parts of the world. But because, especially after the Cultural Revolution, a lot of that traditional values and virtues have been divorced by the ancient traditional teachings of China. And so when people look at each other, they're seeking practical help instead of living life in a virtuous way. So in the last few decades, there's a lot of growth, economic growth in China, but also a lot of just moral darkness. And a story that always comes to my mind and to a lot of people's mind is that little girl, 2011, so, you know, about 15 years ago. But she's a six-year-old girl playing on the street outside of her parents' little shop in a city named Foshan in southern China. And she got run over by a car. And that car just drove away. And then that little girl laid on the street. It's a pretty busy street because there's a camera that captured the whole thing. She lay there on the ground for a long time, and long enough for 18, 20 people to walk by. And they saw her. You can see them on the camera. They saw her laying there. They just kept walking. And then another car drove by and I think ran her over again. And that kept going. And then until later on, a garbage cleaning lady saw her, picked her up, took her to the hospital, told her parents, and then you know, took her to the hospital. And then after that, she didn't live much longer and she passed away. So that was a huge outcry in China. Like, why would people be so cold-hearted? They walk by without doing anything. And also, I find it's beautiful, you know, that it's the most helpless or even the most humble person in society, a cleaning lady, was the one that found her and helped her. And I feel like that's something about what we believe about humility and kindness. But anyhow, so that was a huge deal in China because, like, where have people's conscience gone? And people are looking for moral directions. So that's one end of the spectrum. On the other end, you have people who have become very wealthy. Parents have become powerful. And so there was a guy who also was involved in a car accident. I think he ran over somebody, or it was a hit and run. He drove away and then he was caught by the police. And then he was shouting at the police officer to cut him. He's like, "My dad is Li Gang." That's also a very famous saying in China. "My dad is Li Gang" means like, my dad is some, you know, high ranking official. So like, how dare you to do anything to me? Because now if you have money, you have power, you have right. If you are poor, nobody cares about you. So that sense of moral depravity is very deep in China, and people are looking for answers. And Xi Jinping's actually trying to restore some of that by bringing up ancient teachings, but that's really hard to bring back. So when people are looking for answers and ways to help them find values and directions, sometimes Christianity is the one that provides people with answers. And you see people loving others, cleaning the street without any benefits. They are out there sharing the love of Christ, knowing that they will be persecuted. And that's attractive to people.
Yeah. Well, that brings us really to our last point, which is how persecution is a draw to the Christian faith. So yes, persecution is a negative. Nobody wants to sign up for Christianity when it means their life is going to be harder and it's going to be worse and it's going to bring attention that they don't want. But as we've been talking about, a lot of what's happening right now is just the soil in China is being fed. So I have a garden in my front yard here in Southern California. And one thing that's really interesting is I have to take really good care of the soil. I have to water it. I have to, amend it and make it better for a long time. I think anybody who's just a very amateur gardener like me understands that. So I really do feel like this is a time in China of nurturing the soil and sowing the seeds. And that's really what's happening. So in China, persecution is a huge part of that. As non-Christians look at their believing friends and family members, they see those friends and family members holding on to a faith that does not bring them immediate external benefits. And that is extremely attractive. In my experience in China, not very many Christians live in kind of a Christian bubble. It's not really possible in China to live that sort of, Benedict option Christian life, the way it is in like the Bible Belt in America, where I'm originally from. Most Chinese Christians that I know have lots of family members who are not believers. Their friends and coworkers most likely are not Christians. And that can make it hard. You can feel lonely and isolated, but it also means that the Christian witness is very, very public. I was thinking about this point a little bit, and I remembered whose story we told in season one of the podcast. Her husband went to jail for his Christian faith, and she herself ended up going to jail for Christian faith. And one of the things that made it so, so difficult during that time was all their extended family was pressuring them to give it up because it was sending them to jail and they couldn't see how it was worth it. They couldn't see the point. But I think as non-believers see Christians stick to their guns and refuse to compromise their faith, they know that this deeply rooted belief doesn't come from nowhere. And I think that kind of principled devotion creates a lot of confusion, like good confusion, and a lot of curiosity within people. So, and Ryan, you also mentioned how a lot of ways the Chinese house church is very visible. Like in some ways it's hidden right now. It's not able to be as public as it was 15 years ago. But the Chinese church also tries to, let their light shine. So you talked about cleaning streets. I think it was during Spring Festival. Did you see there was a house church pastor who had shared about how his church wanted to spend their Chinese New Year by just going out in the neighborhood to clean the streets. And by that, I think he means literally like sweeping the streets and picking up trash and helping people in general.
And I think, weren't they passing out red envelopes too? I think they were giving out red envelopes to people.
Yeah, you're right. I think
security guards and people on the street.
Yeah, they just wanted to do this kind of like public act of love that wasn't going to bring them a benefit. And I think that's really shocking and really stands out.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you just don't have a lot of, there are a lot of Christians in China, but compared to the whole population, it's not a big percentage. So when you are a Christian, it really makes you stand out because most likely not many of the people in your family is a Christian, not many of your friends are Christian. So it does make you stand out. And the Chinese Christians also take the Great Commission very seriously. Mm. So even under persecution, they still want to do their best to love their neighbors and to share the gospel. Their way of thinking is that persecution is not our identity. It's just our context. Mm. But they still need to go share the gospel. They still need to love their neighbors. It's just we do it in a different context than the West. We do it in a backdrop with persecution as a backdrop. And so they have not shied away from that mission. So in a way, they're not as visible because their worship their worship services and all that have to be smaller, but at the same time, they're still out there, right? And like I said, Chinese people are very practical, but when you see people doing some very unpractical things, that makes people curious.
Yeah. We did a season of our podcast on Mercy Ministry, and I think that was one thing that people pointed out a lot is that the Chinese church isn't really able to advertise their mercy ministry, but they're still out there doing it and seeking out ways to do it. And there was one house church in central China that was serving left behind kids whose parents have gone off to work in factories and, left these young kids to be raised by their grandparents in very poor deprived circumstances. And I remember that the pastor said, well, you know, we do this through a government agency and they kind of know that we're Christians, but, you know, we give them pictures of what we've done for the kids and they use the pictures to advertise themselves. Like they don't talk about us. They get the credit, but we do the work. And that's not actually unnoticed. Like people see and observe and are, again, curious and confused in a very good way as to why the Chinese House Church is pursuing this.
Yeah. And Beth, you mentioned that was the last thing you'll say, but, you know, I think across the world, especially in places where sharing the gospel is not as open, I'm thinking about Muslim countries where churches have to stay underground more, don't neglect God's work in signs and wonders. And it's weird for a Presbyterian pastor to talk about this, but it is true that there is still a way that God shows himself, especially in non-Christian cultures where the Bible is not known, not well known to people. And I think that God still does that in China. And you will hear stories. We have a friend, mutual friend. He was a pastor. He's a pastor now in the U.S., but when he was a missionary in China, he would meet with students. And he told a story about a student one day woke up and texted him, I need to talk to you right now. And he was like, okay. And then the student went to him and described a dream that he had. And he said, hey, I had this dream that all these Chinese people were just walking down this cliff and God is on the other side, but we cannot get to him. And all these people just go down the cliff and they fall off the cliff and they all die. And my friend was like, oh, wow, odd. And then the student said, but that's not the end of the dream. And the end of the dream, the gap between the outside and God's side is bridged by a cross. So there's a cross in the middle. So instead of walking down the cliff, people walk across the cross to go to God. And so no people have to die. And my friend's like, have you seen this picture before? So then he pulled out the four spiritual laws that he has in his pocket. And that student's like, how is my dream in your pamphlet? And my friend's like, no, that's not, your dream's not my pamphlet. This is something that we've been sharing with people all the time in China. And so, you know, that's a sign of wonder, a vision that the student had that that seems like God showed to him. And he has never seen the picture of the four spiritual laws before, but he had this dream and vision. So I think that's still happening. And my hope is that as the government clamps down pressure and people will still come to faith and through signs and wonders and visions like that. Well, Beth, we talked a long time about many of these things, but does any of these connection points resonate with your own journey to faith? And also, if so, how does that look different in your life here in the West?
Yeah, I think it is very different, but I think the thing I'm always struck by is like, we're all just human, you know, and God works in the human heart in ways that are analogous across time, across cultures. So I think for me, I grew up in a Christian family in the West. And as a kid, I was really vividly aware of the spiritual reality that existed and, you know, had a lot of like vivid dreams, scary things, just was really strongly aware that there was this spiritual reality and that I needed to find a way to solve my problem of being able to know God and being separated from him. And I think, yeah, that's just a truth that's planted deep within the human heart, no matter where you live. So I think that's kind of initially what led me to faith. And I think that's something that's very true for a lot of Chinese people as they search for meaning and for answers to those big ultimate questions in life. But what about you, Ryan? Your story is very different in that you grew up in China.
Yeah, I grew up in China and then I became a Christian in America in my high school years. So I guess I'm a little bit of a mix, but the attraction to Western religion, that's a real thing and it's a novel idea. People want to seek novel things still in China. And so when I became a Christian, it's like, oh, this is a Western thing. All my American friends are Christians. And And also, I love history. Even in high school, I was reading a lot about American Revolution, John Adams, my favorite president. So just all the civic virtues, I know that somehow it's tied to Christianity, that make me really curious as well. So when I became a Christian, I thought, hey, that would now make me a better person. And in a way, it's still very practical, right? Look at Christianity to help me get benefits, to make me a better person, to find moral virtues and all of that. So I thought it would just make me now certify me as a good person. And I think only later on did I realize that we cannot divorce ethics from beliefs, that being a Christian does help me become a more virtuous person, and it does help set up some moral foundation for society. But Christianity is not true only because it's effective. It's the other way around. Christianity is just effective because it's true. So unless you really believe in the gospel, believe in what it says, then only then would you be able to bear fruit of the Spirit. And so we cannot just look to Christianity for all these practical benefits and answers, but you do need to understand it and live it out to really be transformed. And I think that's something that I had to realize as I mature as a Christian. So after all this, how could you be praying for China this month, Beth, based on these topics?
Well, I think what we've been talking about is just what are the opportunities for gospel growth in China. And I think I'm really just going to be praying that that God will be doing in his work in the heart soil of millions and millions of Chinese people. And that, you know, as we move through times, like, again, right this exact moment is not a huge time of the fruition of the faith, but I believe that there are many, many ways in which gospel seed is going down into good soil. So pray that the Lord will bring that about in his own time. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah. I'm praying that people will have their worldview expanded and see that there's a lot beyond the material things in life, because Chinese culture is still very materialistic, very practical. And I was listening to a podcast. I would recommend it. It's by an economist called Drum Towers. But one of the episodes recently was talking about the firewall, the great firewall of China, the internet censorship, and the difference between the internet culture within the firewall within China versus the internet culture in the West. And I think that's just a huge different worldview when you are able to see beyond the firewall. So how much more so when between people who do believe in the resurrection of Jesus and people who don't believe in the resurrection of Jesus. So I just pray that people in China could have to expand the worldview beyond, not just beyond the firewall of the internet, but beyond the great firewall of death and resurrection of sin, and that see God and the hope that he has for us.
Amen. All right. Well, we want to hear from you. Do you have any stories about sharing the gospel with someone from China? What was that conversation like? Please tell us about it. And if you get a chance, share what city you're listening to our podcast from, maybe what you're usually doing while you listen. And if there's a topic you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know. You can email us at info@chinapartnership.org.
And as we mentioned earlier, many young people look at themselves as the last generation in China. So next month, we will take a look at the declining birth rate in China and what spiritual implications that have on the church. So please come back and join us. See you next month.